missing kirtan, so I thought I would try to do something for my own inspiration, even if nobody else got any. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yesterday, I gave a summary because I assumed that there were devotees in Ukraine who were not familiar with the topics I had been speaking about last year from Brihad Bhagavatamrita. So I gave a short introduction about Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And then I gave a little summary of our journey with Gopa Kumar. And with emphasis mainly on where we started our journey with him, which was when the Vaikuntha Dutas appeared to him and instructed him about the holy name. And then upon hearing those instructions from the Vaikuntha Dutas, he returned to Mathura and then fully qualified himself for gaining entrance into Vaikuntha. And then we gave a little summary of Gopa Kumar's experiences in Vaikuntha leading up to his conversation with Narada Muni, and how Narada Muni dispelled the thoughts that had entered into Gopa Kumar's mind, having been awestruck by what he had so far observed in Vaikuntha. And then a lot of details we did cover about Narada Muni's conversation, because there is a lot of important instructions there, but I won't cover them again today. But essentially, Narada Muni was helping Gopa Kumar cope with his Vaikuntha experiences. And because it appeared that everybody was happy, because that's what Vaikuntha is. No anxiety. Except there seemed to be one exceptional personality who had somehow manifested in Vaikuntha, who was wondering why he wasn't fully satisfied. And Narada Muni, understanding his heart, confidentially took him aside and spoke to him and gave him knowledge, which of course is what's experienced in Vaikuntha. There is the Aishvarya, which means to have knowledge of the Lord's opulences, of the Lord's divinity. That knowledge is inherent in the jivas of Vaikuntha. And then, upon delivering that knowledge to Gopa Kumar, what we will soon hear about is Narada Muni's revelation and confidential revelation on a topic not often, or not even not often, not spoken about in Vaikuntha. Because, as we said yesterday, everyone in Vaikuntha is just where they want to be. And as we said, because there's no pride, there's no envy, even though there's hierarchies in Vaikuntha, nobody compares themselves to others in a comparative way, thinking, maybe they're where I'd like to be, maybe I should be where they are. It just doesn't exist in Vaikuntha. Everyone's right where they want to be, in the place they want to be, and with the personality that just suits their bhav. And Gopakumar isn't where he wants to be, but he doesn't know that yet. He knows what he wants, but he doesn't know that he's at a place where he doesn't want to be yet. And Narada Muni is going to have to break the news to him. And surprisingly, we'll get there a little bit later in the chapter when Narada Muni breaks the news to Gopakumar. Sorry, that's my telephone. And the only reason why it was on is because I had to find out if the kirtan was working or not. So I forgot to turn the sound off. And we will do that now. So when Narada breaks the news to him, what does it do? It throws Gopakumar into a deeper anxiety. And someone may say, poor Gopakumar. But Gopakumar is actually, having been revealed about that special place that Narada Muni was alluding to him, but not giving him too much detail about, but alluding, hey, there's another place. Special, special place. And in this special place, there's a special experience, and it's called Mahabhav. And the symptom of Mahabhav, which he'll describe later in this chapter, symptom of Mahabhav is a devotee is thrown into the throes of distress. And externally, it appears to be suffering. And the reason why Krishna doesn't give, and this is what we're going to be reading about today, doesn't give bhakti or prema bhakti so easily, is because when somebody doesn't understand and is not familiar with the nature of this anxiety, if they see somebody manifesting it, they think, they even ridicule. They find fault. They may even potentially criticize. We give an example before. Look what Ramachandra Puri did to Madhavendra Puri, who was experiencing the throes of separation. And Ramachandra Puri said, why are you lamenting? Don't you know that one who's Brahmabhuta, on the Brahmabhuta platform, there's no lamentation? And we know what Madhavendra Puri's response to that was. Get out of my sight. If I see your face at the time of leaving my body, surely I won't achieve my desired destination. He came back to external consciousness to make it known to Ramachandrapuri that, you know, he was criticizing his own spiritual master. Couldn't understand. So, but Narada Muni understood that what Gopakumar experienced when he revealed about a place, and Gopakumar immediately was thinking, I want it, I want it, I want it, I want it, I want it. And he was lamenting because he didn't have it. And it's not an artificial lamentation that cannot be artificially displayed, spoken about, using words, trying to convince others. It's a manifestation that happens in the heart, which is uncontrollable and can only be understood by those who understand its nature. So to try to imitate it is not necessarily beneficial. It happens, it's bhava, which is described by Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that bhava is rarely achieved. It's one of the symptoms of bhava. It's rarely achieved, and bhava bhakti, as he talks about, and it's not easily attained. Why? Because Krishna doesn't give it so easily. He just doesn't give it, what to speak of prema bhakti. And that's sort of like an introduction to this verse. It doesn't come so easy. It can be achieved, as Rupa Goswami says, by two ways. Three ways. So one is by sadhana, and one is by the mercy of the Lord, or devotees of the Lord. But even sadhana, it's understood that sadhana includes association with devotees of the Lord. And Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu goes into great detail explaining these essential points, how it's achieved. And he also explains why it's rarely achieved. And I'm not going to say what Rupa Goswami says in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, because the same thing that he says in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is spoken of here by Śrīla Sanātana Goswami in today's verse. A little introduction before we begin with today's verse. But I want to just read a few verses previous to today's verses, which will bring us right exactly to where we left off in our last class. I'm just going to read them and try to minimize commentary. We did read them to the English-speaking group, not to the Russian-speaking. So Russian-speaking will get the advantage of hearing it today. These verses were Narada Muni's concluding statements when Gopakumar asked, can't one get everything by worship of the deities? And Narada Muni said, yes, very clearly, one can get everything, all perfection, and it became quickly attained for those who worship with proper intelligence and the right consciousness. But Gopakumara's question was, why are there disparaging statements in Shastra which seem to indicate that those who worship deities are lesser devotees? It's in the Bhagavatam, third canto. There's other statements and elsewhere in the Shastra. And becoming familiar with Shastra and a more recent, when he was in Mathura, he heard Shastra, although he wasn't so familiar with Shastra before that. He was pretty naive, didn't know much about Shastra. But in Mathura, he heard Shastra in the association of Brahmins and heard the glories of the Lord. And he also heard from Vedas personified. Therefore, he had knowledge of Shastra and was utilizing his knowledge of Shastra to ask this question. Why these disparaging statements? And Narada Muni explained, the disparaging statements are about those who don't worship in the right consciousness. And then, again, I'm not going to repeat. We talked about this yesterday, and I'm not going to repeat everything we talked about. I'm just going to read these last few verses, which lead up to today's verse, where I'm going to begin with verse, actually, verse 216, 217. And this is Narada Muni's explanation why sometimes saintly persons condemn materialistic worship. They never condemn proper worship. They only condemn materialistic worship. But even their condemnation of materialistic worship is compassion. And he says, although the fruit of their worship of Hari is in itself greater than the results of all pious material activities, they do not gain the highest fruit they would have derived from proper devotional service to the Lord. In various scriptures, therefore, the best of saintly persons condemn such materialistic worship. And actually, in the commentary, Sanatana Goswami is explaining that those who worship the deity, even in improper consciousness, they get a higher fruit than those who engage in pious activities. And they go to the heavenly planets and they get an enjoyment. They get it because those who go to the heavenly planets, they get a temporary enjoyment. Not only do they get temporary enjoyment, but in the heavenly planets, there's a lot of envy. And there's a lot of, because there's a lot of envy about he's got this and they've got that, there's a lot of anxiety. It comes along with the enjoyment. And as we spoke of before, just like the fighting between demigods and demons, you know, they're always fighting over the different various heavenly pleasures. Demons want it, demigods want it, and they fight to keep it. Because demigods are Sakama devotees. They are not on the platform, a highest platform also, in many cases. But those who worship the deity, even in improper consciousness, they get a lasting pleasure. It lasts. They don't go to the heavenly planet. They enjoy it. But they don't get bhakti, pure bhakti. He says, faithless worship of the Lord's deity results in vast, faultless, material enjoyment, unencumbered by the complications that result from ordinary fruitive rituals, like being promoted to heaven. So they get enjoyment. But why do the saintly persons speak in a condemning way about their worship? Because, and that's explained in the next verse. Rather than saying it, I'll read it. No, not quite the next verse. Soon. Because when the Puranas and other scriptures make statements that belittle deity worship, you should understand that all such statements refer to those particular worships, not to all devotees. That's text 218. But if such materialistic worshippers never give up their worship under any circumstance, their dedication will purify their hearts, then, by the mercy of Krishna's devotees, who see only the good qualities of others, the faults of such worshippers will be exhausted. And in time, those worshippers too will become first-class devotees. So, the materialistic worshippers, they get enjoyment. They don't go to the heavenly planets. But by their steady worship, they catch the attention of the very merciful saintly devotees, who, not only the attention of the saintly devotees, but of the Lord also, who takes notice of their steady worship. And as we explained before, in due course of time, it will take some time, in due course of time, he will accept their worship and they'll get the fruit. They'll get the fruit. It may take time. They get mercy of Vaishnavas. They get the mercy of the Lord. So it's not the same as ordinary pious activities or ordinary types of material enjoyment, which is obtained by millions of births of pious activities. Just like we oftentimes quote that verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that pure devotional service cannot be achieved by millions of births of pious activities. It can be achieved only by those who have an intense greed to have pure devotional service. Therefore, wherever they see it, they should very eagerly try to purchase it without delay. So it's not by pious activities that one gets bhakti. But because the deity is non-different from the Lord, but they don't see it. They think I'm worshiping a statue. They think I'm worshiping stone. But the deity is not different than the Lord. Unfortunately, by dint of their consciousness, they don't understand how the Lord is reciprocating with their lack of devotion. And therefore, for them, he remains stone. He remains wood, brass. But for those who have the right consciousness, he manifests differently to them. Those who have the right consciousness. And therefore, those who have the right consciousness, when they look at those who have the wrong consciousness, they're thinking, they're speaking in a critical way, because why are they wasting so much time in these petty fruit of enjoyment? Why are they wasting it? And therefore, because they're thinking like that, they speak critically. Because those who are in the right consciousness, they're always eager. They can't waste a moment. That's one of the symptoms of bhava bhakti. They don't, avyarta kalat vam, they don't want to waste one moment. And they're seeing these foolish people are wasting so much of their lives enjoying petty types of enjoyment. And therefore, they won't, they'll obtain the fruit if they continue to worship the deities. The devotees will be merciful to them. They'll overlook even whatever criticism they may make of such saintly devotees. And they'll think, hey, he's worshiping God. Even though he's motivated. But he's worshiping God. And they'll simply see the good. And therefore they'll bless them by their blessings and by the Lord, but it takes time. So, and that's the point. These are the verses. Devotees who have material desires, they first enjoy the material results for which they hanker, and later on, the strength of devotional service, they enjoy the true fruit of devotion. But because the fruit does not at first appear, pure devotees decry what those worshippers first achieve. Pure devotees, after all, think that seeing the Lord constantly, attaining bliss from taking part in his pastimes, and relishing subsequent pleasures are the fruit of devotional service, and its root as well. Those devotees cannot tolerate even a moment's delay in obtaining that fruit, nor can the Lord neglect such devotees. And this is also going to come out now. The Lord cannot neglect them. He'll never neglect those devotees who worship him with unalloyed love. He's always reciprocating. Thus, all the other fruits of desires are paltry, even liberation from the personality of Godhead. They are easily obtained, but his pure devotional service is not. Today's verse, which is wonderful verse. It's a did I chant Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya yet? No. Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tat prasadena bhaktanam adhino bhagavan bhavet iti svatantriya hanyeva natam dhajyan maheshvaraha. Translation. By the mercy of pure devotional service, personality of Godhead, the Supreme Controller, becomes subordinate to his devotees. This, in effect, deprives him of his independence, so pure devotional service he rarely bestows. Now this verse Narada Muni is telling Gopa Kumar what others say about pure devotional service. But in the next verse, which we probably won't get to today, in fact, we probably won't even finish today's verse. But the next verse, he's going to give his own opinion. Others say this, but the next verse, he's going to give his own opinion that it's okay that for Krishna to become subordinate to his devotees. He likes it. He likes it, and his devotees like it. And he likes that his devotees like it, And his devotees like that the Lord likes, that his devotee likes, that they like it. And this is what Narada Muni is going to actually begin, because he's going to describe the reciprocation that exists and how the Lord fully reciprocates by subordinating himself to the love of his devotees who worship him in spontaneous, loving, devotional service. He just gives them exactly what they want, just as he gives everyone in Vaikuntha exactly what he wants, what they want. Krishna gives them exactly, the spontaneous worshippers of the Lord get exactly what they want. And what they're not necessarily thinking, I want to control Krishna. That's not what they're thinking. But because Krishna likes it so much, he becomes bound to their pure unalloyed love, and he says, I want to be controlled. Tell me. Whatever is in your heart, whatever is there in your heart, tell me. And you have to tell me, because although I know what's in everyone's heart, the super soul, but there's a different kind of relationship that goes on in Goloka. Super soul is not there. So therefore Krishna wants to hear it. And he wants to relish it by hearing it. That's one of the differences. Well, the glories of Goloka, which is this Goloka Mahatmya, which is going to come out. He wants to hear his devotees speak like this. He wants to hear and relish the chastisement of the gopis. He wants to hear and relish the chastisement of his mother Yasoda. Not that he, that he has to understand it by any other way. He wants to hear it and relish it. And to cry. To cry from that chastisement. And not only to cry, in a pretentious way, because it just doesn't happen in Goloka. As we understand, his tears are not pretentious. He's not making believe to cry. Mother Jasoda's got him just where she wants him. And he's crying out of fear. And that's all he experiences, fear. From that stick in Mother Jasoda's hands. So these are expressed by the devotees, these feelings. So let me read the commentary. And pure love for Sri Krishna Dev is more difficult to obtain than liberation. Now, if everybody thinks, oh, if liberation is easier, then why didn't I go for it? Be careful. That's the exact same conversation that took place in Mahakalapur when the personified Vedas said, don't listen to them. They're gonna tell you to go for it. We've got something better. And then Gopakumar, of course, by hearing from the Vedas who glorified devotional, glorified bhakti, the Agamas and other Vedas, then he understood he didn't want to go there for liberation. Just didn't want to go there. Why? Vishaya vinivartandehi niraharasyadehina. Because he understood that I was just given some higher taste. And by getting that higher taste, everything else, including even liberation, is so petty. And that's another reason why one has to hear the glories of bhakti. If one doesn't hear the glories of bhakti, one may become fooled into thinking that, you know, liberation doesn't sound so bad. But for one who has bhakti, liberation already stands at his doorstep with her hands folded, waiting to serve, such as the power of bhakti. So pure love for Sri Krishna Dev is more difficult to obtain than liberation. In the words of Shukadev Goswami, Rajan Patiya Gurur Alam Bhavatam Yadunam Daivam Piya Kula Pati Kwa Cha King Karova Astvivam Anga Bhagavan Bhajatam Bakundo Muktim Didati Kahichit Smana Bhakti Yogam. My dear Parikshit, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna is always ready to help you. He's your master, guru, God, very dear friend, and head of your family. In other words, he is your master, he's your guru, he's your God, dear friend, and head of your family. But sometimes he agrees to act as your servant or order carrier. You are greatly fortunate because this relationship is possible only by bhakti yoga. The Lord can give liberation very easily, but he does not very easily give one bhakti yoga. That's Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, 16th chapter, 6th chapter, 18th verse. One of Krishna's names is Mukunda, which can be divided into three parts. Mu, or liberation. Kum, or happiness. And Da, giving. Meaning that Krishna bestows the bliss of liberation. Or Kum can be understood to mean devotional service. So Krishna is the bestower of both liberation and devotional service. So Krishna is, however, although the Lord often awards liberation and ordinary devotional service. We're going to have to hear about what is the difference between ordinary devotional service and special devotional service. Actually, Prabhupada talks about in Chaitanya Charitamrita, ordinary devotional service. And there's a purport where he speaks about the distinctions between ordinary devotional service, mixed devotional service, and special devotional service. However, although the Lord often awards liberation and ordinary devotional service, he very rarely gives prema bhakti. Why? Some say it is because when Bhagavan, the supremely independent controller of all, gives prema bhakti, he becomes obliged to give up his independence. For devotees who have prema keep him helplessly under their control. Helplessly. It means he's helpless. Imagine the supreme controller being helpless. Can you imagine people who have this conception of God as God hear about a helpless God, they're really going to have a difficult time with that. In fact, there's even a, I remember a book that came out many years ago. It was by a rabbi. And his name was Harold Kushner. Something like that. Kushner? No? Oh, anyways, Lakshmi Moni, can you speak? You seem to know his name. Kushner. Kushner. Thank you. He wrote a book about why or when bad things happen to good people, or why bad things happen to good people. And he was a religious person, and he couldn't figure out, because he had a child who had a disease. And the disease was that he died an old man, although he was only, I guess, teenager, something like that. It was a very rare disease. And here he is, a religious man who's supposed to have a firm belief in God. And how is he supposed to understand this innocent child? So he had to come up with a conclusion that either he's all good, or he doesn't have complete control. He's helpless. And he had to come up with the conclusion that he couldn't give up that he's all good. He's an all good God. But somehow he doesn't have complete control, because otherwise how did this happen to my son? That was pretty much his. Is that Lakshmi Moni? Is that a fair? Is that a fair? I mean, I didn't read the book. I didn't read it. I think I read Ravindra Swarup's article about it in BTG. And he was such a prolific writer that I didn't need to read the book. And that's pretty much what I got from it. So, he misses some things. Yeah. Misses a lot of things, I'm sure. But how did they deal with the fact of somebody who, you know, loses control? And it's what it says right here. He's helpless. Helpless. How can God be helpless? They can't reconcile that. How can God be helpless? They can't. And because they can't, they come up with all of these different kinds of explanations. So they don't have to say God's a bad person. But God is helpless. Helpless under the control of those who control him with prema. He's completely subordinate to him. I just realized that I've probably gone 20 minutes over my time. I'm going to finish the commentary, but I'll speak on this verse tomorrow, because there's a lot more to say about this. So I'll just finish the commentary. Or, first is, he gives up his independence, becomes obliged. Devotees who have prema keep him helplessly under their control. Or, taking the title Bhagavan to express his absolute omniscience, he knows everything. The idea is that he knows the impropriety of giving prema bhakti to anyone uneducated in the rasas of pure devotion. other reasons for the Lord's hesitancy to grant prema bhakti will be discussed later on. And don't worry, they're not really that far later on. They'll be discussed during the Bhakti Sangama festival, because they're only a few verses ahead. And I believe I've overstayed my welcome. I don't know how else to describe it. I'm not sure what's going on. I see devotees sitting there, but I don't know in Kablava, but I don't know if there's somebody waiting outside to come in and give class. And that happens a lot. And if there is, that's the last thing I want to do, is to offend a Vaishnava and who's waiting to give class. So I will end here, and we will continue with this verse tomorrow. Thank you very much. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Siddhi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki.